Do you want us to keep producing the best VCU men's basketball podcast out there? If so, there's a way you can help. If you enjoy this show, please consider donating to help us pay for the cost of making it available. You can do so by using the PayPal link in the description of the podcast or on social media sites where we post it. Even a small donation would help. Thanks in advance, and go Rams! Welcome to Rams Rewind, a podcast that looks back at all of the action from VCU men's basketball. In this special in-season bonus episode, host George Templeton looks at the state of the program and interviews experts about all things VCU basketball. And now, here's George.
All right, Rams Rewind is back, and our season is not over, even though we lost in the Atlantic 10 championship to Duquesne. We are in the National Invitational Tournament. And first and foremost, if you like what you hear and you want to help us out, you can shoot us some dinero via the link to the PayPal in the description of Podbean, your other podcast platforms. If you do, we will shout you out on the podcast. We thank you for all the support you gave us last year and this year as well. And since VCU is playing Villanova, we've brought on Chris Bellotti of the Full 40 podcast to join us to talk about Villanova. You can follow him on Twitter at Chris Full 40, and you can follow the Full 40 podcast, THEFULL40, on Twitter. And they've been on for 6 years, which means they got a national championship in since they've been created, which is pretty darn cool. Chris, welcome to Rams Rewind. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate joining you guys, and looking forward to our game tomorrow night. And hopefully, because I don't remember us playing in my recent memory.
We did in the Shaka era, and I remember you kicking the crap out of us, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. But that's a long time ago now, right?
Like, yes, it is. It's hard to believe, but yes, it is.
By the way, Shaka's been returning the favor pretty heftily at Marquette on us. We are fully defeated versus him so far. So,
well, we could spend all day talking about how much I love Shaka, but we don't want to do that. And it's interesting, your introduction, you talk about you were looking forward to this game. That's been one of the questions that's been circling around, certainly our fan group and others, is where are Villanova's heads at not getting in the tournament and getting to host this NIT game? How are the fans taking it and how are the players taking it? You know, what are we going to see in terms of a crowd and in terms of enthusiasm for this tournament tomorrow night at the Pavilion?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. So there's definitely a few angles to approach it with. I'll start with the fans because you started there. The fans do feel like this season was a failed year, that the expectations of this team weren't met. We are 2 years removed from a Final Four. You know, I think people might expect, your fan base might expect, the Villanova fans unilaterally just expect to make Final Fours left and right after the run that we had. But I think Villanova fans are a little bit more reasonable than that. I think following Jay Wright leaving, I think there was definitely a thought that, okay, we're definitely going to take a step back. I don't think people expected to take as immediate and as jarring of a step back as we did. So last year's NIT team, last year's team was riddled with injuries. Justin Moore tore his Achilles in that Elite Eight game versus Houston a couple years ago and didn't get back on the court until very late January, early February, which hobbled that team. You know, being from VCU, you know Kyle Neptune from Fordham, but he has not – he was pretty inexperienced. And I think he struggled to put the pieces of this roster puzzle together this year. Just never got any offensive rhythm. Defense was solid. Defense was good. But this team never seemed to find an offensive rhythm. Some of that is because I don't think we have a real pure point guard. But regardless, and if you followed Villanova, you would have heard this many times. Reportedly, our NIL donors spent $3 million on this roster. And for that team to not make the tournament with all of the other encumbrances that Villanova has and all this other stuff. So it was viewed as a pretty big failure. I think we were ranked preseason, which, you know, you can take for what it's worth. We went down to the Bahamas and won three games in 3 days versus Texas Tech, UNC, and Memphis, and thought, hey, coming out of that, we're going to be golden. Then we got our you know what beat by St. Joe's, and Drexel. And it was right back to like, who are we time. So this season did not go the way that the fans expected. As a result, I would expect that the Pavilion is not going to be terribly rocking tomorrow. I'm not even expecting a full crowd. I just think that the disconnect between expectations and reality was pretty stark. And so I think the fan base is disappointed. I think you'll find that there's definitely engaged fans. Villanova has a lot of diehard fans. I think people will watch. Going might be a little bit of a different story. I'll also add to that, Villanova is pretty small community and school. You might be surprised to learn that a very significant portion of the alumni are actually from the New York, New Jersey area.
I did not know that at all, because I think of Villanova, I think of the Big Five.
Right, Big Five. And it's not to suggest that there isn't a large Villanova contingent down there. But if Villanova was in North Jersey or New York City, I think we could probably pack the house.
Okay.
But being that it's down in Philly, it's still a lot of people down there. I just don't know if there's enough to fully get all the energy and enthusiasm that you want to do. The school is running a $2 concession.
I did hear about that on the radio this morning in Richmond Radio. $2 beers, yeah. and that caught the attention of radio host in Richmond that I used to actually work with at the newspaper. Now, you've hit on a bunch of things that I wanted to ask about, but I'll start with Kyle Neptune. I thought he was pretty good. I think he had a lot of positive reviews in his first year at Fordham, even though the record wasn't terrific. But that people thought, okay, he's laying a foundation. And I was caught, and I think everybody in the A-10 was caught by surprise when Jay Wright retired and he boomeranged back. How are the fans taking it so far with him? Is there any chance that he's on a hot seat next year in your view?
It's interesting. Villanova world is, as I mentioned, small. The administration runs things very tightly. And it's very funny. Like, it's actually a joke among fans who follow Villanova or alumni as well. That Villanova always says, oh, we do a national search. And then they hire the guy who they've known forever, right? Like, we just hired him. We just placed into our development office, like our alumni donation office, like the head of development is a guy who graduated from Villanova, was an admissions counselor. He worked his way up in the development office. So, but it works. And it's always worked for Villanova. Villanova hired, just for context here, Villanova hired Rolly Massimino in 1973. His assistants included Steve Lapis and Jay Wright.
Of course.
Steve Lapis took over the reins from Rolly Massimino in the early 90s and wasn't even technically fired, but obviously was kind of fired, but was like, there was a mutual agreement to part ways and he moved on. We hired another Rolly assistant, Jay Wright. Jay Wright was obviously around for over 20 years, and then we hired a Jay Wright assistant, Kyle Neptune. So if you really think about it, it's been within the same coaching tree for 50 years. Villanova has not really liked firing anybody in any athletics position over the years. And you'll hear Villanova people say, and when I say Villanova people, I mean administration or alumni of the basketball program, etc. You'll hear people say, Jay Wright made the NIT his first 3 years at Villanova, so why shouldn't we give Kyle Neptune time? Now, obviously, that doesn't take into account the fact that Jay Wright was like a 0.05 percentile outcome
shape when he took over.
Exactly. Villanova was a totally different position when he took over. The fan base is, I would say, look, some people will disagree with the percentage I'll throw out, but let's just say, I'd say a very significant majority of the fan base has had enough with the Neptune era. I think part of the reason why is that NIL budget that I mentioned this past year. Part of the reason why is that he had old experience rosters of guys who made tournament runs, etc. So, you know, if you're trying to keep a culture together and you're hiring a culture guy and you maintain your roster continuity and you have one of the oldest rosters in Division I and players seemingly all over the place, except certain, very certain specific guys, take steps back from what their expectation set was or regress in their shooting percentage, as an example, throughout the entire course of a season, and just basically don't meet expectations, the fan base is really frustrated. There's also a lot, if you look at Villanova's like resume this year, there's a lot of like recurring themes. Villanova seems to give up what Evan Maya, I don't know how close you follow him as a data analyst from college basketball, but he tracks what's called kill shots, which if you deliver a kill shot, it's called, it's like a 10-0 or a 10-0.
I've heard about that about the last month and a half, and I kind of know where you're going with this. Yes.
Yeah. So teams like Houston and UConn, right, deliver a lot of kill shots. Villanova has been the recipient of very many kill shots. So we'll have scoring droughts that are 5-6 minutes long with no timeout, right? And we'll have and we'll do that to start a game, right? Like we were what was considered a potential game that if we won could get us into the field at home a week and a half ago versus Creighton. And we were down 32-8 within like the first 8 minutes of that game. Mm-hmm. And so, and like that type of thing happened many times this year. But then the team fights back. So then the pro Neptune crowd, if you will say, look at the fight. Like the guys fought for their coach, they fought for their program, they fought for the name on the front of the jersey, fought back into the game and got
the
close.
Is not except buried for the fact like that.
Yeah. Except for the fact that we still didn't end up winning all those games. Like it's not like we overcame that and won. We maybe won a couple, but the vast majority of them we lost. And lost in heartbreaking fashion oftentimes. So when you look at our resume in games under like 5 points and less or something like that, I think we're something like 4-8 or something of that sort. And included in that is the loss to Penn, loss to Drexel, certainly some quote-unquote good losses too. Butler, we had a big lead early, so we kind of fought back and had actually took a big lead early. Surrendered a 15-plus point lead to lose in double overtime against Butler a couple months ago. I'm just bringing up examples, but like this has been a very recurring theme this season, and it's been excruciating to the fan base to basically say you beat a one seed, you beat UNC, you beat Texas, a 6 seed, you beat Creighton, a 3 seed, all before December 31st. And then couldn't put together a resume that made the tournament. And as I said, I don't want to make it sound like Villanova's fans' expectations are Final Fours left and right. But I think Villanova's fans' expectations are to be in the tournament more often than they're not. And 2 years in and are 0-2 on tournament bids with, as I mentioned, good NIL, old experienced players, right? Like, and guys who have been in the tournament and in the Final Four before, so you'd expect that there would be some level of culture program continuity. Then there's minuscule coaching decisions, which everyone's going to poke holes in if you don't win. Like just on Thursday night at the Big East tournament, we had the ball tied with Marquette after fighting down from down 8 or whatever. We were tied with Marquette in the closing minute, and our point guard, Mark Armstrong, ran over to Kyle as if he was going to call timeout, and Kyle said, no, go play. And then we ran the clock down, and then we got off a contested shot. And then Marquette almost won on a buzzer beater, but then ended up winning in overtime. But all that's to say is that the fans certainly want Kyle Neptune on the hot seat. The fans want him gone. The administration's definitely going to stand by him. And a good sign, if you're looking at this, is that everyone who's not injured expects to play tomorrow. So that was news that broke midday today. Because last year we played in the NIT, Justin Moore sat, arguably was hobbled, still coming off the Achilles injury, probably wasn't fully right. Cam Whitmore, who was expected to be a lottery pick, ended up going 20th in the draft, but was a lottery pick, decided to sit. And so people were like, well, I mean, two of our best players are out. You know, why do we even accept this bid? This year, everyone who's expected to play is available and is supposed to play. So Justin Moore will play, Eric Dixon will play. So everyone's expected to play. So with that being said, it's definitely a good fact for Kyle as he finishes his second year and goes into his third year that he's got the team on board to play in this tournament.
You mentioned about players regressing and that being one of the big issues. I'm going to talk about one that's familiar to us. Tyra Burton was at the University of Richmond. Very good player. I will say VCU had a lot of success defending him, but the guards that were responsible for that are not here anymore. And the guards we have now are not nearly as good defensively as the ones that would guard him. Tell me about Tyler Burton's season. I looked at his stats just now as I was getting ready for this, and I was kind of surprised to see, you know, the offensive punch wasn't there like what he had when he was down there in Richmond. Granted, you know, on a better team with a lot of really good players, you may not get as many chances. How has Tyler Burton done this year?
It's a little bit of a mixed bag. It's a big complaint amongst Villanova fans, etc., on how we've used and utilized Tyler Burton. So I think I was about to say something and I wanted to take a step back because I think one of the many frustrations that people have with Kyle Neptune is you got this fantastic player who had terrific statistics and also was just a great player at Richmond, was in a NCAA tournament team a couple of years ago that won a game. And I think that there was an expectation that Tyler Burton might be our best performing transfer in. Very experienced guy, has good size to him, can shoot, but he's also just like makes great cuts, etc. When he's moving without the basketball and cutting down towards the rim, he's been at his best. That's been his best usage, but we just don't – I don't think – and my co-host Willie watched a lot of him when he was at Richmond and was really excited about bringing him in and is the most frustrated of all of us about how he's been utilized because he felt like we could have utilized Burton and built our offense maybe a little bit more around him. But we don't, he's not a center focal point of the offense. He gets shots. He gets opportunities, but he's been a lot of a spot up shooter at Nova, which I guess if you think about Villanova and how we like to play, it's, you know, get a piece of the paint, you know, drive, kick, 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 find, you know, good, better, best type 3-point shooting. This team has not been a good 3-point shooting team in general, especially as far as Villanova standards are concerned. But he's been in a lot of those situations as opposed to like rim running, cutting to the basket, you know, finding opportunities, he's getting shots blocked left and right. He's definitely struggled to shoot the ball, I think, relative to what people expected, but I just don't think that necessarily should have been his role on the team. And a lot of the offense naturally focused around Justin Moore and Eric Dixon, who obviously are two very impactful, I'll call them program legends for Villanova. But a lot of it revolved around them. And so it just, the offense never felt fully connected on Villanova this year. And I think Tyler Burton, probably statistically, he might have bared the biggest burden of that offense never really gelling or clicking this year.
Before I ask about one of those players you just mentioned, the winner of our game will play the winner of South Florida and Central Florida. South Florida's up a dozen at Central Florida, and they were actually up about 15 or 16 just about a minute ago. So that is of interest to both of us because one of us is going to be playing the winner of that game, morally knows what. You mentioned Eric Dixon, your leading scorer, and he is the kind of player our front court's going to have a problem with. 6'8", 255, wide body, big body centers and power forwards have been a real problem for us this year. Chad Vetting at St. Bonaventure, some of the Duquesne guys, Burris in that championship game, Mahorcic, those guys with that kind of body type have eaten us up. Tell me about Eric Dixon, the kind of player he is and the kind of problems he can pose for opposing teams.
Yeah, so Eric does he's a jack of all trades. He's really a four and a five slot. 6'8" is not, 6'8" obviously tall compared to probably, I don't know how tall you are, but he's definitely tall compared to me.
Yes, definitely tall compared to myself.
So he's obviously tall, but like, you get my point, is that he's not your typical five man. That's been pretty common for Nova. We've typically can play five out. Before Eric Dixon, it was Jeremiah Robinson Earl who would like to shoot the ball as well. Eric likes to take a big man and drag him out to the 3-point line, and we like to invert our offense. So like, TJ Bamba is a physical guard. Justin Moore is a physical guard. Jordan Longino's injured, so he won't be playing, hurt his knee against Marquette in the Big East tournament. But we like to invert our offense and then have Eric Dixon roll out. And he likes to shoot the three-point jumpers. And he hits them at a pretty good clip. His percentage fell a little bit this year, but a lot of offensive load was placed on him. So he definitely has a little bit higher volume than he's had in years past. That being said, he had a really fantastic year. And when we did win big games, he had big games. He put up over 30 on UNC. He put up another 30 piece on Creighton. So he's had some really strong performances against bigger competition because exactly that. We use him intelligently, wisely in a big role to create mismatches. Now, where that hurts us is that we're not a particularly great rebounding team. Certainly, we give up a good amount of offensive rebounds, which I think if we were a better offensive rebounding team, which there would be trade-offs, but like, I think if we were a better offensive rebounding team, I think we might be a top 10 defense in the country because we get a lot of stops, a lot of late shot clock shots, etc., but then oftentimes give up a second defensive possession, or I guess offensive possession, and end up getting burnt in that regard. So he's definitely not like a shot blocker. He's not an above the rim player. He will post up. He does have good post moves. He's shifty. He's very talented with his footwork. He makes good reads more often than not. He can pass. He's not the best passer in the world, but he can pass. If he can find an open 3-point shooter from the post, he will kick it out. But he's a very good player. At our best, our offense has had him get down low, and then if he can read a double coming at him, which a lot of teams do send a double, if he can read the double and see it coming, we can put a shooter, an adept shooter, Brendan Hazen is a good example of that, on his strong side. He can get into a two-man game between him and Hazen, which creates a lot of problems for the defense, because Hazen's a great 3-point shooter. And if you send his defender to Dixon to double him, Dixon will kick it back out to Hazen and you'll give up a 3-point shot. If you don't bring the double, Dixon's a load down low. And even though he doesn't have the biggest size from a height perspective, you mentioned he's a wide body, strong as when you get on the court with him, when you watch him play, you'll actually see him. He loads up and there's a lot of force there. and so
strong he can create space. What you're telling me.
Yeah. He's been awesome. Not that necessarily your fan base cares, but he's a fan favorite and for good reason. He's an excellent guy. He's a model citizen of the program. It would be very easy for him and understandable for him. He technically does still have another year of eligibility, but it would be very understandable if he said, I'm going to sit and go pursue my pro career and not get injured in this game. But no, he's like, he got interviewed today and was like, no, I'm 100% in, like, another opportunity to wear Villanova in front of my chest and play with my brothers, so to speak. And so he's a old school Villanova guy, kind of harkening back to our golden age, six, seven, 8 years ago.
Well, it's interesting that you say that about him, about reading the double. I always caution VCU, and I always talk about not falling in the trap of doubling, because then you're chasing the ball around the perimeter and eventually the open guy is going to get a good look and then you're hoping he doesn't make it. And it sounds like we could be in the same pickle here, except, of course, some guys we can get away with guarding one-on-one down in the post because the physical matchup isn't bad. This sounds like, especially with our two guys, because they're not the biggest body guys in the world, that this could be a bit of a physical mismatch with Dixon. So it's going to be interesting to see, I think, early on if they go to Dixon down low and he gets rolling down low against us, then you might see us try to double him, and that might cause us a real problem. So that is very interesting. That's going to be a very interesting matchup to watch. You mentioned, I think you said, Hazen as a three-point shooter. You know, who are the other guys that you think could be an issue for us in terms of trying to defend you? Because our defense is hit and miss. Sometimes it's really, really good, and sometimes it's really, really terrible, and sometimes it happens in the same game.
I know all about that. I know all about inconsistency, which, by the way, if you're inconsistent, that's why you end up in the NIT, right?
So, very true. Very true.
I'll call out Justin Moore first. Justin Moore, look, any one of these games is going to be his last game in a Villanova uniform. His eligibility is expired. So any one of these games is going to be his last in the Villanova uniform. As a result, given that he didn't play a postseason game last year, I would expect you'll see a ready Justin Moore. At his best, he is a gamer. He's kind of never changes his emotion. He's like always got the same facial expression on. Looks like he's not having fun. Kind of looks like a little bit, he's like a little pissed off, but just very intense guy. At his best, he's a tough bucket getter. He is the guy who you put the ball in his hands and say, go get a tough shot if he needs to make a contested bucket, etc. He is strong, wide-bodied, etc. So he's not like super explosive. He's not going to like beat you off the bounce unless it's on a cut or a slash or something like that. But he will back you down in the post. If we invert our offense and he gets down low in the post, make sure that you got a big, strong guard defending him, because he is not afraid to back someone down and put his body on him and make some post moves and get a bucket. So
I'm happy to report we have some sizable guards that might be able to prevent that. We'll have to see about that, though.
Yeah, right. And so that's definitely good, because that's his game. But he's kind of like a crafty weave and bop kind of guy. He's not going to hit you with a dizzying array of dribble moves. He does like taking threes. He's very good at a quick shot. If he gets a pass and your defender's even like a half step off of where he should be, he'll put it up. He hits a good chunk of them. His percentage this year is about 32%. But if I had to bet in the last, like, maybe forgetting the Big East tournament, but like in the 5-6 games leading up to the Big East tournament, if I had to guess, I'd bet he was probably like closer to 40%. I don't know that for a fact. I'm guessing, but it felt like he was hitting more shots down the stretch of Villanova's season. He got injured against Kansas State back in December and sat for the better part of a month, or at least 2-3 weeks. We had heard that he was kind of playing injured for a while, so he wasn't himself. But then once he got his legs back under him in early to mid-February, he started playing and shooting and just being overall a lot better and more impactful for us again. So I'll start there. Then I'll swing over to Mark Armstrong, who will in all likelihood start a point guard for us. Mark is like he's a very, very talented player. You could see it when he's on the court. He is bouncy, he's athletic as could be. We run like a dunk contest in our Midnight Madness or Hoops Mania, we call it Hoops Mania, event every year. And he's won the dunk contest the last 2 years, 6'2". But the guy can get up. He is a blur. He's as fast as they come. And so he can get by you with a step. He doesn't need to put any moves on you. He could just blow by. And he will on a flat-footed defender. He has had a little bit of trouble finishing around the rim this year. He actually likes and hits a fair share of pull-up mid-range twos. He loves blowing by a guy, getting to his spot at the elbow, and then the guy kind of over-recovers, and then he creates some space for himself, and Mark takes a two-point mid-range shot, which is not necessarily a high percentage shot overall in the scheme of basketball, but is a good shot for him. He hits those, it feels like, I'm not sure if this is actually factually correct, but it certainly feels like he hits those at a much higher clip than he hits his layups when he gets to the rim. He also gets his shot blocked a lot. We're actually one of the most blocked teams in the country. I think KenPom has that as like, yeah, we're literally like 357th out of like 360 some odd teams in terms of getting blocked. So definitely get blocked a lot. And he's one of the main culprits of that, as well as Burton. But he's lightning quick. And when he's on, he's really on. He can be really, really fast. Now, teams in the Big East scout him really well. So I think he had a little bit better of an early non-conference, or I should say a late non-conference than he did in Big East play. He was a little bit inconsistent up and down in Big East play. He's only a sophomore. But it's tough because you kind of watch him, and there's a huge juxtaposition because Moore is not the explosive guy. We play a slower tempo, and Mark's fast. So, like, Mark is always the best guy to have it if we can get a breakaway in transition, because he'll run away from the defense. But other than that, it kind of is like, who are you in terms of offensive identity? Because are you the really fast blow-by-you guy with Mark Armstrong, or are you the patient, methodical guy that you are with Justin Moore? And that hasn't gelled. And we haven't – like, I think a really good coach and a really good team would – make that juxtaposition work by basically featuring different components of your offense and finding different ways to push those buttons correctly. And a really inconsistent offensive team like us finds a way to make that mishmash a problem, because we don't even know what our identity is offensively.
Well, I have to thank you for coming on. It's been great. I unfortunately don't feel as good about BCU's chances, because it sounds like even if the fans aren't with it, the players are with it, and they're gonna play with enthusiasm. So it's gonna make it tougher on us. I think I'm quite sure we're gonna play with enthusiasm, because honestly, I wasn't sure that we were even gonna get any NIT. But the coach, right after the game against Duquesne, said, "Yeah, we're absolutely in. If they invite us, we'll definitely come. We'll definitely play." It's been an interesting year for us because we had a new coach and mostly a new roster, and it's been up and down for us as well. But Chris, I just appreciate this so much. This is absolutely wonderful. And we here at Rams Rewind believe in shameless self-promotion. So anything you want to promote here at the end of this show, this is your opportunity. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, and I'll actually use the opportunity and I should have led with this from the start. I think I said earlier, I was like, I don't know the last time that we played. But I am actually really looking forward to playing you guys, because I have a tremendous respect for the VCU program and fan base. Big East Twitter and A10 Twitter is kind of like a little bit of like a yin and yang type of experience. It can be a very funny place for both environments. But one thing I always notice every time I turn VCU on is the team, no matter the coach, team plays hard as could be. The fan base has always got that arena rocking. It's always a hard place to be. You always knock off teams that, you know, theoretically you might be underdogs to in certain environments when you play there. Obviously, you've had your tournament experiences and runs, et cetera. But I'm really excited to play VCU just because it's a cool program that I've always had a bit of an affinity for. And so I think it'll be cool to see you guys at the Finneran Pavilion tomorrow. And Hopefully after the game, the coaches can find a way to put each other's teams on the schedule and going forward.
Oh, I love that idea. By the way, I have a shout out before I go. The Philly crew in our fan group, we got a lot of Philly alums that go to every time VCU's playing at Philadelphia, and they're going to be there. They're going to be out in force, I think, tomorrow night. I'm looking over tonight by the time that most people listen to this. So I'm looking forward to seeing our representation there. Chris, appreciate you coming on, joining us from the full 40. Folks, that's Rams Rewind. There will be a live recap and video in the Good and the Bad and the Ugly group tomorrow night after the game, and of course, live in Blackfast Land on Thursday. And if we win, maybe there'll be more of these. We'll see what happens. Thank you very much, Chris, for joining us. Thank you all for listening on Rams Rewind. Have a good night, everybody.
to submit a question for George to answer in an upcoming episode or to inquire about sponsorship opportunities for this podcast, please email ramsrewind@gmail.com. We'll be back after the next game, and thanks for listening to this episode of Rams Rewind.